last chapter in the book. We are coming to the conclusion. We're coming to the end of the beginning. The word Genesis means beginning. We are coming to the end of the beginning. You know, it strikes me, we're going to see a couple of funerals here in this 50th chapter. And it really is, I don't know, can I say, it's kind of tragic when you think about how Genesis began. Genesis began with a loving God that in 6 days created all that we talked about earlier, all this wonderful creation. And even we look at it in its fallen state and we stand back breathless in amazement of what he did. Can you imagine what it was like before it fell, before the creation fell, before sin entered? God looked upon it and he said, it's not only good, he said, it is very good. And if it's very good to him, you can only imagine. Only our wildest dreams would give us an indication of what it must have been like. Unfortunately, by the time we get to the end of Genesis, we're seeing funerals. And so here is God, his wonderful creation and making, putting man in the middle of it and giving him access to the tree of life where he can live forever. And there's this wonderful dream in the heart of God, if I can say it in that way, this wonderful plan and vision for the earth and for the family of God to be developed and birthed in the earth. And then we see man, what he did with it. And by the time you get to the end of the book, you have nothing but funerals. And so it is, it's kind of sad. Yet knowing God and knowing that there are many devices in a man's heart, but the plans and purposes of God will always stand. We know that even though we're seeing a couple of funerals here at the end, and we see the depreciation, I guess we could say, of what God had created and what he meant by man's fouling up so terribly, yet we see right here in the last few verses that maybe we'll get to this morning, not only is God looking forward, but also Joseph will be looking forward to the reconstruction, to the rebuilding, to the reinvigoration of the earth. God still has a plan, and he's not taken by surprise. It's a tragedy to us. I'm sure it broke his heart, but he is not left without a plan. So Genesis 50 and verse 1, Jacob has now died. We saw his last days in the last couple of weeks, and then today we see the events following his death. Let's begin to read with Charles, if you will, verse 1 in chapter 50.
And Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept upon him and kissed him.
This is after now Jacob has yielded up the ghost and died. Imogene?
And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, so the physicians embalmed Israel.
Okay.
And 40 days were fulfilled for him, for so are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days.
I don't have an answer for this. I wondered why Joseph would have his father embalmed. It was uniquely an Egyptian custom. The Egyptians were very much concerned about the afterlife. It's interesting to me here that Jacob, of course we're going to see it with Joseph too, that they had, while Joseph had access to the wealth and the riches of Egypt, he did not do as the pharaohs had done. They spent most of their latter years in building these large pyramids and temples and so on, places where they might put their remains when they died. Jacob said, I want to go back and be buried in a simple way, like my family before me. And I'm not sure what to make of the fact that Joseph has his father embalmed here. I thought you might be interested in knowing a little bit about the embalming process. Notice that it says that Joseph gave his father's body to the Egyptian physicians, and they embalmed him. And it says 40 days, Claire read, were fulfilled for him, for that is what it, that's what's required for the embalming. And then the Egyptians mourned him for 80 more days. Burying the dead was big business in Egypt. Embalming and coffin making, painting and constructing funeral furniture, and all the accompanying religious ritual kept whole guilds busy forever. It took about 2 months to complete the process of embalming a body. Those of you who are squeamish can now hold your ears. First, the brain was drawn out of the skull through the nostrils. Lois fainted. Someone fan Lois with a bulletin or something, all right? Mary is turning green. First, the brain was drawn out of the skull through the nostrils. Then, through an incision made in the flank, the vital organs were extracted. The body was then cleansed with palm wine and purified with pounded incense. The hollowed out body was then filled with spices and perfumes, pure myrrh and cassia and similar items, and soaked in nitron for weeks on end. Now nitron, I'm not sure, was the word I was thinking of here. When they preserve meats and so on, they use a nitrate mixed with the salt mixture and so on. It's a preservative. I think that's what they're referring to there. It's like a powder that mixes in with the salt, and it's a preservative. So they soak the body then in nitron for weeks on end. After the proper period of saturation, the corpse was washed and wrapped in strips of fine linen, smeared with gum the Egyptians used for glue. The embalming being thus completed, the corpse was placed in a wooden case fashioned in human shape and then taken to the sepulcher. So that was the custom for the Egyptians, and apparently that's what they did to Jacob's body. Now, it may have been that the reason they did, just struck me now, it may have been, because I'm wondering about why would Joseph have that done? And it struck me, it would be very difficult to take a body untreated the long distance back to Canaan. I guess maybe that's it, isn't it, huh?
Probably have a lot across the state line.
Yeah. You either, if you don't embalm them, you have to bury them immediately. So I guess that would be it. I couldn't understand why Joseph, being a godly man, would employ this means to prepare his body for burial. I mean, it just didn't make any sense, but now it does, because it was a good long trip. Yeah. That he... what is they said about Lazarus? He was in the grave 4 days, and he what? He stinketh. So it didn't take very long for a body to begin to decay. Okay, so I guess maybe that's it. So 40 days, and then here's 70 included in the mourning. And so what, 3-4 months have gone by here, Jerry?
And when the days of his mourning were passed, Joseph spake unto the house of Pharaoh, saying, If now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, saying.
Yes, Don.
My father made me swear, saying, Lo, I die in my grave, which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan. There shalt thou bury me. Now, therefore, let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again.
Notice the first phrase in verse 4. This is important for us when, you know, sometimes when you lose someone who's very close to you and you wonder whether the grief will ever pass. And here's I really like this statement. When the days of his mourning were past, and your mourning does pass, your grief does pass, no matter how deep it may be, it does pass. Time really is your friend in those situations. I don't know why it works that way, but it does. excuse me, and as if when you lose a loved one and you sense your mourning is passing, you sense your grief is beginning to assuage, sometimes folks feel guilty because they're no longer grieving. And they feel, well, there's something wrong with me. I didn't really care about her, or I didn't really love him. How, if I really did, how could I not feel miserable still? You know, I should still be wallowing in my grief. I should still be miserable. No, you shouldn't be miserable, and it's not a sign that there's something wrong with the quality of your love. Grief, in the Psalms, it says sorrow lasts for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. There is a time for the passing of grief. There's a time to show grief. There's also a time for the passing of grief. And God's grace upon us will not allow us to live our entire life. Now, we can choose to live it that way if we want to do, but it's morose, and it's not natural, and it's not normal. Mourning ought to pass, no matter how close the relationship there is to the person who has passed. And so an appropriate time for mourning is normal, but anything that goes beyond that, which is appropriate, is just morose. It is not normal. It needs to be, if you know somebody like that, or you find yourself in that kind of a situation, you know that that's not God. See, that's not God. That's the devil just laying a sadness upon you, laying a misery upon you, and he'll keep you in that as long as he can. But that's not normal. So Joseph, after the days of the mourning were past, Joseph sends word to Pharaoh and says, now my father extracted a promise from me just before he died, and he wants to be buried in the land where his people are. Will it be okay if you let me, will you just let me go, then bury my father, and I will come back. All right? Who's our next reader? I think it's Cecil, verse 6, Pharaoh's response.
And Pharaoh said, go up and bury thy father, according as he made thee swear.
Okay, so here's the permission. Lois?
And Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt.
Is it interesting? I don't think some commentators think that maybe Pharaoh sent all of these Egyptians along to make sure Joseph and the Jews would return. I don't think that's the case here at all. I don't think that's the kind of relationship they had. There's no indication of that. The indication I have for this is that Pharaoh, while he did not go personally, which would be very unusual for him to do, did send many representatives because of his affection for Joseph. And because of his affection for Joseph, he also loved Joseph's father. And I see this as an act of respect in the same way that you would go to a funeral. Why do you go to a funeral? You go to a funeral because you love either the deceased or you love someone who was close to the deceased, and you want to join with them and comfort them and strengthen them. And just being there at the funeral or at the funeral home is a way of saying, I feel a bit about what you're going through. I love you. I care about you. I care about your loved one that has passed. Gene?
Well, also, you have to consider that Pharaoh considered him his number one faithful servant.
All right.
And anybody below him has got to bow down to this man, because he's, if they don't, this is they got to accept the consequences.
So this is a high government official is what you're saying here. Yeah, yeah. And there would be this is almost like a state funeral, isn't it? Even though it's Joseph's father, okay? So Joseph goes up, he takes with him, or he doesn't take with him, they accompany him, many of Pharaoh's servants and the elders over the land of Egypt. What might a present day representative be of these people? Who do you think he's referring to, the elders of the land of Egypt?
Ambassadors.
Gene says congressmen, governors. These are political people who are in great positions of authority in the land of Egypt. They go up to attend the burial. Okay, who's our next reader? Anita?
As well as all the house of Joseph, his brothers, and his father's house. Only their little ones, their flocks, and their herds they left in the land of Goshen.
Do you remember the story of Moses when he was going to take the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he asked Pharaoh, he said, God said, let my people go that we may go into the wilderness and worship him. And Pharaoh's a different Pharaoh now, remember. This is several hundred years later. Pharaoh said, first he said, no, you can't go. And then after he has gotten a little bit of encouragement, you know, by the frogs and the locusts and the bloody water and so on, he said, okay, you can go, but you can't take your little ones with you in order to keep a hold on them. And then when he had a couple more, boils on all the cows and everything, then he said, okay, you can go and you can take your little ones with you, but you can't take your cattle with you. Do you remember these stories? And in other words, I'm going to hold your wealth. I'm going to keep your money. I'm going to freeze your bank accounts is basically what that means. You can go, but you can't take your money with you. Moses said, no, God said, when we go, everything we take is going with us. Now, of course, Moses never made a promise to return. Notice Joseph said in verse 5, I will come again. In other words, I'll be back. And I don't know here whether this is a matter of convenience. It doesn't really tell us that the little ones and the flocks and so on, they left behind. Or whether, oftentimes when you go to a funeral, you get a babysitter for the little kids, for the real little ones, you know. And you go to the funeral and leave your kids at home. It might have been nothing more than that. I don't really know. But there is a reminder there of the situation with Moses. Okay, who's our next reader? Mary?
And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great company.
It would remind us of a televised state funeral with the horses and the carriages going down Pennsylvania Avenue. That's the kind of... The idea I get here is that everybody's attention is focused upon this event. All right, Don?
And they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan, and there they moaned with a great and very sore lamentation. And he made a mourning for his father 7 days.
Okay, Jane.
And when the inhabitants of the land of Canaanite, the Canaanites saw the mourning in the floor of Atad, they said, this is a grievous mourning to the Egyptians, wherefore the name of it was called
Abel Mizraim.
Abel Mizraim, which is beyond Jordan.
Okay. That means the meadow of the Egyptians. They named it that, and forever after that, they remembered what happened at that location where the Egyptians made such a grievous mourning to Jacob. And I don't know whether this is a professional mourning, or I have the idea that it probably is not. I have an idea that because of the affection of the Egyptians for Joseph, remember what Joseph had done. He saved their country. He saved the people with the wisdom God had given him. And had it not been for them, Egypt would be nothing. And so here's a man who would be, we would think at least, very well thought of in Egypt, not only by the Pharaoh, but also by the people who prospered under his oversight and over his ministry. And the fact that he should be saddened by the loss of his father, isn't that how you feel when someone you care very much about loses someone close to them? You may not even know the person who died, but you know the one who's grieving, and it saddens you. And that's what seems to be happening here. I sense the Egyptians not having a particular affection for Jacob, but because of their affection for Joseph, they make a great mourning as they come to bury him. Who's our next reader? Groom? Ken.
And the son did unto him according as he commanded them.
Okay, Charles.
And his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for a possession of the burying place of Ephron the Hittite beyond Mamre.
Okay, next. 14.
And after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who went up with him to bury his father.
Okay, they buried him now in the place where Abraham was buried. and Sarah is buried there. Sarah was the first one to be buried. Abraham had bought the land. Remember the negotiations back many, many years before. Excuse me, this is the only land that Abraham ever owned in Canaan. He buried Sarah there. When he died, he wanted to be buried there. Jacob buried his wife Leah there, and that's where now Jacob is laid to rest in a cave. In a cave there in near Mamre. And so now Joseph and all the Egyptians, his family and so on, have all returned to Egypt, and they settle down to living there in Goshen. Verse 15, Claire.
And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which he did unto him.
Okay, Jerry.
And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, thy father did command before he died, saying.
Okay, Don.
So shall you say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sins. For they did unto thee evil, and now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servant of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him.
Okay, next.
And his brethren also went up and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we be thy servants.
This is a great tragedy. The brothers have come down to Egypt. Joseph invites them to come along with their father, their wives, their children, their flocks, and everything. He makes a home for them in the best part of Egypt for animal husbandry in the land of Goshen. There's good water there. There's wonderful pasture there. They've lived there now. We're told Jacob lived in Egypt 17 years. They've been there 17 years. And Joseph has not done anything for them except bless them. He has done nothing but bless them. He just given to them the fact that they know him, are related to him in a special way, is a place of blessing for them among the Egyptians. And yet, when Jacob dies, fear enters their heart. And you see that all along, they didn't fully trust him. All along, they didn't fully believe in his love for them. All along, they didn't fully accept the fact that he really cared with an unconditional love. And so, they feign they make up this lie, and they don't come themselves, they send a messenger to Joseph. And the message is, they were afraid that since Jacob is now dead, that Joseph now will have the boldness to bring harm to the brothers. They say, Joseph will surely hate us, and he will make us pay for all that we did to him. And so they send a messenger. And they concoct this lie. And the lie is, before Dad died, Dad told us that we should ask you on his behalf to forgive us and to not hold against us all that we did. And in verse 17, notice he says, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy, in other words, because of the God that we serve and because of our common Father, you should forgive us. And then after the messenger had gone to prepare the way, now the brothers come and they fall down before him and so we're your servants, but please, you know, forgive us for Dad's sake, because this is what Dad, this was among his last requests. Now, I don't know about you, but this reminds me of I guess all Christians. We said that Joseph was a wonderful preview of the Lord Jesus. We come to Christ, and he loves us, and we know that he loves us. He forgives us, and we know that he forgives us. He does nothing but bless us. Has he ever brought us harm? Has he ever thought harm towards us? Has he ever given us a sign that he might be going to do something that would hurt us? No. But yet we refuse to perfectly believe him, don't we? And we think that somewhere along the line, we're finally going to get nailed for our sin. Somewhere, you know, somewhere along the line, we're finally going to have to pay. Now, what that is really is unbelief. It's an unwillingness to accept the fact that he forgives us. And that's what was happening here to the boys, to the men.
We're so used to the conditional love and the judgment that we bring upon each other, you know, in the flesh, that we can't really understand unless from the Spirit, that unconditional love. And so they didn't have the ability, you know, not being in the Spirit. So they perceive it from their own perception.
Yeah, what's our excuse?
We've
yeah, but we have the Spirit, though.
Right.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't, but still, it's understandable because they only understand what they understand, and that's conditional.
Yeah.
Those conscience are a horrible thing. They're a good thing, but you understand the conscience. They knew that somehow they hadn't repented, or they fear unbelief. But just conscience, what brought all this back?
This is what it says to me. The absolute impossibility of God's love for us. I mean, that is unfathomable. How can you, Lois said, we have never experienced that from anyone else. I mean, even mamas. I mean, mama's love is a real good love, but even mamas don't love like that. See? Even mamas can't love like that. It's not possible. We don't have an understanding. I was going to say we don't have a vision. We don't have an understanding of the the length, the breadth, the width, the depth, and the height of God's love for us. That's why Paul prayed for the Ephesians. This is what I want for you. I pray that you would comprehend the love that God has for us, for you. How could we ever come to the place where we would think that God has not already forgiven us when he said he already had? I mean, this is so indicative of the way we all are at times. I mean, you know, we have our times of great confidence before God, but then we also have our times of, well, I'm not really absolutely sure here, you know. And the boys just, you can almost see the fear that gripped their heart when Dad died. And now the funeral. Okay, there's no hindrance now. Now we're really going to get it. So I think oftentimes Christians have this understanding of the day of judgment. They say, well, you know, yeah, I'm saved, I'm fine, I'm going to go to heaven, but I just don't really want to face him. Because I'm afraid of that judgment. But see, there's no fear in love, is there? John said. There's no fear in love, and we should have no fear of the judgment, because John 5:24 says, he that hath believed in me hath already passed from death to life, has already received his judgment, and his judgment is life. And so when we appear before Christ, when we appear before him, There's not going to be any, it's not going to be a time of sadness. It's not going to be a time of upbraiding. In fact, that's a good point there in James 1, where it says, if any man doesn't know what to do, if any man among you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to every man liberally, and what? And upbraideth not. Not. We think somewhere along the line, I think we all have this, you know, this feeling, somewhere along the line, we're going to have to get something. When I say get something, we're going to have to get some punishment. We have to, because it offends our sense of fairness if there's no punishment. I mean, you know, if maybe it's not going to be actually a hurtful punishment, but it'll be a disappointment, at least a disappointment, if not a punishment. Somewhere, we're going to have to pay, because we know life's like that. You have to pay, right? But if we really know and really believe the love that God has for us, if we really know and really believe what the gospel is all about, if we really know and really believe what Jesus did for us, there isn't a day like that. He already took it. That day was Calvary. And we were, as far as God was concerned, there with him and took it there. He took it on our behalf. And so, you know, if we understand that,
we'd live a little differently.
We'd not only live differently, Jerry, I think The thing that causes me distress is the fact that so many Christians have so little rejoicing in their life, have so little real joy in their life, have so little praise and worship and celebration and I don't know how you can really know this and have an understanding of this and not be childlike in worship. I mean, how you can know what he did for us and how he has removed not only the penalty but the fear of it, and how you can, Jesus said, if you don't allow them to praise me, the rocks will cry out. You know, that's how I feel. I think the church really needs a refreshing in some of the things that we're talking about this morning, and to really know what God has done for us.
You know, when I first come to this church, we were singing and dancing and praising the Lord and having a good time. And then like all of a sudden, somehow or another, we just like, that wasn't right, this wasn't right, and it looked like everybody start watching everybody else, and it offended this person as we dance and raise our hand, and all of a sudden we just quit doing that. And I think when we stopped doing that, we lost all the joy and the freedom that we had to really worship God the way he told us.
It didn't happen all of a sudden, though.
Yeah, and it's hard to get back. It's
over a period of time. It's a little bit here, it's a little bit there, it's a little, you know, here a little, there a little, and the first thing you know, you turn around and you say, what happened?
Yeah. It's really what we're studying Wednesday night, too, is the difference between law and grace in the law brings judgment, because you have the rules and the regulations and the law, and then you expect the judgment. And as long as you walk in that, you can't walk in grace, because the two don't mix. And grace brings freedom.
I see it too. It's like doubt, insecurity, it just gives the devil a chance to slip in there when there's no reason for it.
Well, he's the one that brings the condemnation, isn't it? He's the one that brings the accusation. He's the accuser of the brethren. We need to have a voice that is tuned to the Holy Spirit, and not an ear that is turned towards the devil, listening to that. Do you understand why? Look at the last part of verse 17. He cried. The man cried. he lost it. I understand why, don't you? Because you're saying, you know, his heart is just broken. Don't you understand? You know, I had many opportunities. If I wanted to hold you accountable for what you did, I had many opportunities to do that. I'd go like this, and you have no heads. I go like this, you have no property, no flocks. I go like that, you have no kids. I go like that, your life is over, snuffed out, in, boom, all done.
That's why the Lord is with us.
Exactly right. I think we do this too. I think sometimes we just break his heart. And that also is a sign of his love, that he doesn't. I mean, if you did this to me, I'd do more than weep. I mean, I'd be angry about it, wouldn't you? Because I'm just too much flesh. I think all of us, you know, I shouldn't say all of us, that's not true. Maybe most of us are. I mean, there's enough flesh in us that it wouldn't just break our hearts, it would also break our composure. Okay? But with him, I think this is another expression of his love. That the fact that we act in unbelief. See, the problem with these brothers is unbelief. That's the trouble with them, see. Now, as long as they continued to believe in Joseph's forgiveness, as long as they continued to have faith in his love for them, the relationship was sweet, wasn't it? But all of a sudden now they begin to get afraid, and that fear was produced by an unbelief, an unwillingness to believe that what Joseph had said was true. And when they lost their confidence in that, they lost their faith in that, then they began to be afraid of him. That's what unbelief will do for you. It'll make you afraid. It'll make you fearful. Isn't that what happened in the garden? When Adam and Eve fell, they lost their faith towards God, lost their confidence towards God. They began to be afraid, and they run to hide in the bushes. Now, these guys had no place to hide, so they sent an ambassador. Please, please, don't kill us. And they even put a lie with it. Can you imagine how that would affect this man, Joseph? How he loved them so much. He could, matter of fact, he could have killed them without even their even knowing who he was. Remember when they came down to get the grain? And he wept. I mean, that breaks my heart just to see that. Oh, boy. Yeah. And the love of God that he would not requite them for their unbelief. You know, he didn't bring them to account for their lying. He didn't bring them to account for their fear. He didn't bring them to account for their unbelief. He just takes them. You know, the scripture says, God knows that we are but flesh. And Joseph knows that his brothers are like this.
If you look at them and look at ourselves, you know, they did get the reward of what they had earned, so to speak.
How so?
Okay, they weren't enjoying all the benefits. See, they were still worried. They were,
yes.
And they were reaping what they had sown by their unbelief.
Yes. Their unbelief cost them their peace, didn't it?
We do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Their unbelief cost, exactly right. Their unbelief cost them their peace.
Well, you know, it's hard to believe something that you're not willing to do yourself. These people would not, if the roles were reversed, they would not have been able to forgive Joseph. So they cannot comprehend that he is able to forgive them.
That is very true. That is very true. And that's the problem that we all have. I think Lois alluded to that earlier when she said that we are familiar with conditional love. Not only do we receive it from others, but that's what we give. And because of that, we don't have any experience, and we certainly have an inadequate experience. And I got to tell you, it's getting worse and worse and worse as our families get more and more fractured, as we get families that are broken and split, and you have people, you know, children, young people, and so on, growing up in those kinds of families that have not even experienced the feeble attempts that we have been benefited by, you know, from our parents and family members and so on. We have never known unconditional love, but we have known and do know wonderful love, don't we? There are many people out there that don't have the foggiest idea, don't have a clue, and it's getting worse. Gene?
It really boils right back down to you letting your head control what your heart is.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind's gonna mess you up every
time. That's right.
Along the line of what Claire was saying, to me it says right here, just above where it says, and Joseph wept, it said, God of thy father. Don't say anything about God being their father.
Mm.
The God of thy father.
What he's referring to here is the God of Jacob.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're kindly braided into this judgment thing, though. My mother loved me dearly, but if I broke her law, brother, I got the hickory. You understand that? So you're just raised. If you break the law, you reap the judgment. And somehow it's hard to translate into God's just ever-forgiving love. You can and you do, but it takes that regeneration.
Yeah.
Which they didn't have.
Yeah. Yeah, and even when we do have it, we still are.
We bounce back.
We're still imperfect in our understanding of it. Yeah.
I see this also is the brothers have not really. They still don't love Joseph like they should, or they would have. They been able to love him out of all the goodness, you know, that he had shown to them. They would not have had this fear in their heart because they would not have felt like, I mean, that love covers a multitude of sins.
Mm-hmm.
They've forgiven, still not had that dislike, maybe it wasn't as strong as it was when they did to him when they did, but I just feel like they still were not as close to him as a brother and that they still feared because they maybe felt like he was just doing the goodness because of the Father or whatever.
Well, don't you know Christians like that who live in the blessings of God, but never learn how to have an intimate relationship with Him, never accept His love, and since they don't accept His love, never learn how to love Him.